To augment this process, members of the victim's support network may simply be purchased to spread rumors concerning the victim with the intention of further isolating him or her. This aspect of the process may be and is carried to the extreme of simply murdering members of the victim's support network. The process of discrediting the victim, isolating the victim, is a continuous one, and isolating the victim from members of the opposite sex, particularly potential sex partners, is a central feature of this process. This is the background. The foreground is the adaptation of the Cameron depatterning technique. The central feature of this is to use microwave auditory effects in place of the tape player and headset, which pattern used in a part of the process called psychic driving. The microwave auditory effects are used to humiliate and ridicule the victim and to express the torturer's contempt for the victim, which is also expressed through the application of copious amounts of pain. Contempt is also expressed by breaking and entering the victim's home and burglarizing it on a daily basis. The victim is allowed no privacy whatsoever. His every action is commented on disparagingly. This is accomplished by bugging the victim's home with an array of devices, including video and sound sensors. The quality of the bugging equipment available to the CIA today is beyond the imagination of the average man. These sensors have been miniaturized to the point where no visual inspection will ever discover them, and they are sensitive beyond belief. The bugging devices themselves could be the subject of a separate paper. Well, capabilities like this have in fact been developed in an addendum to Radio Free America number 5. In addition to reading most of the paper that I've just read you, I have excerpted what it is like subjectively for someone to undergo this type of microwave mind control torture. Interestingly enough, a woman who was a professor at Foothill College and who wrote under the pen name of Dorothy Burdick published a book. Unfortunately, there were not many copies of it, but she published a book called Such Things Are Known, published by the Vantage Press and copyrighted in 1982. She was subjected to this. She had voices speaking in her head. Her body would twitch uncontrollably. She would experience spasms of pain. And her experiences are excerpted in an addendum to Radio Free America number 5, which you can obtain from Paul from Archives on Audio. It's interesting, too, a personal note. In 1990, I quite unwittingly came across someone that was deeply involved with the National Security Establishment. It was an accident, and I had not intended to do this. I then received a note, or actually the note was sent to Archives on Audio, and Paul read it to me over the telephone, and I have known for a long time that my home telephone is tapped. The note read like this: "You are a stupid son of a bitch. You are now under surveillance. Two of your associates know this. They lie for us. You got that? Talk to him again about anything, and you get microwaves. Microwaves to the head. Much cleaner than bullets. Look for cameras. You won't see them. Look for us, you'll see us." And I was then subjected to not only what I suspect was low levels of microwave radiation — I didn't hear voices in my head, and I didn't die, and I wasn't twitching uncontrollably — but something was wrong, and I suspected that it was very low levels. They were in effect asking me, you know, this is a little bit of it, would you like some more? I was also subjected to what is known as high-profile surveillance. They can keep track of you in such a way as you won't know they're keeping track of you. They kept track of me in such a way as I knew damn bloody well they were keeping track of me. And in fact, Paul himself was a witness to some of this. We went into a coffee shop, and this fellow just sat down, and you just knew that's who it was. It wasn't paranoia, but it was very obvious what they were doing. Eventually, I received a sort of between-the-lines communication. I scrupulously avoided talking to the particular him in question. I then eventually received a communication which asked me, in effect, okay, have you had enough? And I replied that, yes, indeed, I had enough. And whatever the strange physiological effect was, it disappeared as though someone was throwing off a switch. So this is something which is around. Someone that was subjected to much worse levels of it than I was, you can read it, you can hear about in Radio Free America 5. But it is an element that I myself have come across in some of my own firsthand experiences. One of the applications, too, and this is the last item that I will discuss this evening. It's almost midnight, so we've been going on for quite some time. One of the things that I'm going to discuss this by way of conclusion is one of the applications of mind control technology. I suspect the remote control microwave cordless technology that I've been talking about, also the other more primitive forms of mind control, is to create, quote, psychotics, unquote, quote, lone nuts who would suddenly run amok and shoot up a bunch of people, thereby terrorizing society, convincing people that police state tactics were in order, reduction of civil liberties, expansion of police powers. People don't generally... Well, first I should say that as someone with a considerable background in psychology, most people who are, quote, mentally ill, unquote, whether neurotic, clinically defined as neurotic or psychotic, are not only violent. There are certainly violently psychotic, violently disturbed people, but most people who are, quote, mentally ill, unquote, are so overcome with anxiety, so beset with anxiety, that very simple activities such as going to the supermarket to go grocery shopping become extremely difficult, if not impossible, for them because of this anxiety. They not only aren't violent nuts who are going to go out and pull down on you with a pistol, but they find it extremely difficult to function even in the relatively ordinary sense. There are, of course, violently, quote, mentally ill, unquote, people, but the vast majority of the psychiatrically or psychologically distressed are extremely gentle. They are so overcome that they basically hide from the world they live in. They don't attack it. Some are certainly, some people who are, quote, mentally disturbed, unquote, are violent. I would be the last person to deny that. But I suspect that some of the lone nuts that we have been seeing going around and shooting people at random, I suspect in particular the Stockton Schoolyard Massacre at the Cleveland Elementary School in January of 1989, in which an individual named Patrick Edward Purdy, who not only had been involved with the Aryan Nations, but also had been involved with the Moonies, suddenly ran amok and shot a bunch of Asian children, and was then shot himself to death in classic MKUltra style. Shortly thereafter, the push for control on assault rifles and the push for gun control began in a big way. I noted that the spokesperson for the Stockton School District, who handled the press, was the former spokesperson for the United States Army Western Command until his retirement in 1985. I also noted that there is a very interesting, quote, ex-unquote CIA agent who is deeply involved with and to a large extent behind the gun control movement. A newly, quote, retired, unquote CIA agent named Edward O. Wells in 1974 but founded one and helped immeasurably in the founding of the other supposedly competing handgun control organizations, this despite the fact that he himself not only owns two handguns, but a Sharps Borchard rifle. He's been liberally assisted in his efforts by none other than William Colby, former director of Central Intelligence, who stated that he learned about the dangers of handguns while working for the CIA. Well, I don't doubt that one bit, particularly since Mr. Colby had been director of the Phoenix program in Vietnam, in which scores of thousands of Vietnamese were dispatched, most of them using Silenced 22 and 25 caliber handguns. As the financial system totters, as the economy totters, as we see the federal judiciary mandating really draconian tactics as far as jurisprudence, I see the gun control movement against the background of the Rex 84 and Operation Night Train martial law contingency programs, which came to light in the Iran-Contra scandal. And I think that it is something that we ourselves are going to have to keep an eye on. I certainly don't sanction murder, but at the same time, I think that there may very well come a time when we are going to have to defend ourselves against the authorities. I don't advocate, you know, attacking people, attacking policemen, attacking the military, yet there may come a point where they attack us. When that time comes, I'm afraid we are going to have to fight back. If firearms are out of our hands, or if we only have 22s instead of more significant weapons, then we're going to be in very tough shape indeed. I would also note that suppose Patrick Purdy, because there was a huge push for gun control after this happened, I also noted the fellow in Killeen, Texas, who the day before there was an amendment for George Bush's crime bill that would have drastically restricted Americans' access to firearms, this fellow went off and shot 22 people in Killeen, Texas, which also happens to be the home of Fort Hood, the largest U.S. Army base in the world. And this account of this massacre was juxtaposed with the account of the Senate, actually it took place on the same day, of the Senate rejecting the gun control provision of George Bush's anti-crime bill. That kind of juxtaposition is characteristic of the sorts of media psychological warfare components that have been used by the CIA and other intelligence agencies as the media component to ongoing covert operations. Fred Landis has written about this extensively in such books as Death in Washington. He's done a number of articles in publications like Science for the People. I think that at least some of these lone nuts may very well be being deliberately programmed, and I suspect that is one of the motivations. If, for example, Patrick Edward Purdy had killed 5 children by driving a pickup truck onto the grounds of the Cleveland Elementary School, I do not think we would have seen a media campaign and a political push to limit people's access to pickup trucks. More people are killed by automobile accidents every year than firearms, and I am suspicious personally of the sudden brouhaha, the sudden public cry for gun control, whereas the National Rifle Association has been quite successful in resisting gun control legislation in the past. The access to assault rifles would give the citizenry a firepower component roughly on a par with that of SWAT teams and the National Guard and other militia. Without it, they will not have that firepower component. I hope to God I'm wrong, but I'm afraid there may come a time, perhaps sooner than we think, when that firepower will be necessary. But keep an eye on these lone nuts going off, whether or not they're being programmed to affect gun control. Certainly, some of them, many of them, most of them perhaps, are natural, given the increasing, it's the thing I touched on earlier, given the increasing level of violence in our culture, in our media programming, given the increased pressures on all of us due to a disintegrating economy, a disintegrating environment, certainly more people are going to go off the deep end than would otherwise do so. But I suspect that some of those who are going off the deep end are being pushed off the deep end, and I think it's something we should keep an eye on. Well, that basically concludes the lecture for this evening. I want to thank all of you for coming, and I hope it was a worthwhile experience for you. Thank you.